Welcome back to Implementing a Data Warehouse with SQL Server 2012 Jumpstart. I'm George Squillaci. I'm here with Rich Curry. And Rich, you have a lot of good things queued up for us in this module.
Yeah, this is going to be a fun one because we are going to go back and continue on this data flow thing. We're going to be talking about data flow, transforming data. We're going to be dealing with a lot of the standard transforms that you use to build an ETL process. Now, not control flow. Control flow, after the meal break, is going to deal with workflow issues. This is all about manipulating the data as it goes on through. So let's go in and start talking about the beginnings of this. Merges, lookups, data modification. This is one of those topics where we've got a lot of transforms that can affect the content of our data. Merge transforms to take two data streams and bring them into a single one. We've got lookup transforms that can go out and get data from somewhere based on a value in the pipeline. And we've got data modification that can actually change it as it goes along. So let's start out with the merge transforms. And there are two of them, the merge transform and the merge join transform. Both of them, George, require that your data be ordered. And even better, it's got to be in the same order. You can't have data sorted by date in one input and by product ID in another, because then there'd be no way to put them together. The merge is like taking a deck of cards, splitting it in half and shuffling them so that they come together like this. But in order for them to come together right, they have to be in that same order.
Well put. I like the interleaving there, Rich.
You know, it's a visual. It works.
It works.
All right. Now, another requirement on merges is that they have to have the same number of columns in both data flows, and they have to have the same data types in each column. Now, it would help, George, if they also had the same logical information in each column.
Sure, sure.
But it is not a requirement, unlike the other two. Now, if I've got a data source that has the ability to pre-sort the data, that would be a huge benefit to the data flow. So whenever possible, you want to have the data sorted in the data source. So if you're retrieving it from an RDBMS, you'd want to put an order by on that data, on that retrieval, on that select statement that would put the data in the appropriate order, and then you would mark that data source as being sorted. You then have to indicate what it's sorted on so that the development environment has the ability to check and make sure that both sources are sorted the same way. Now, the merge deals with records and putting two record sets together. What I like to say, it puts them together vertically.
Yeah, I like that too.
It takes the two record sets and it puts one on top of the other, or takes them and combines them so that they come into a single flow. A merge join is more like a database join. A merge join has the ability to support inner joins, left joins, full joins. There has to be at least one column that matches from a metadata standpoint, data type, etc. And again, like the merge, both inputs have to be sorted the same way so that the join can be enabled. What you end up with then is a single record set that matches the two records together and creates, instead of a set of records stacked on each other, it's side by side, where the record from input A is matched up with the record of input B, and you have all the columns from both inputs together.
Something's curiously missing, though. I see an inner join, a left, and a full, but I don't see a right.
Okay, George, very simply, if I were to take and flip the tables from one side to the other, what happened to my left table?
Well, guess what? I got a switch there.
Yeah, the left is on the right and the right's on the left. So if you need a left join, you'd start with table A. If you need a right join, you start with table B.
There you go. Easy.
So, All right. Let's move into our next topic. Look up transforms. Look up transforms, again, just like emerge and emerge join, it is a multi-input transformation. Merge and merge join take two and bring them together. The lookup takes a value from a record that's currently in the data flow pipeline and then goes out to an external source to retrieve information from a record that has a matching value. It is typically defined by a select statement. So it takes a value, it uses that value to select data from that external source. The external source can be either an OLEDB connection or a cache connection. A cache connection is a connection that's in memory. Now think about this for a minute. What would be more efficient, George? Would it be more efficient for me to look up each record from an external database one by one? Or might it be more efficient to go out and grab the record and leave it in memory in case I need it later?
Let's leave it in memory.
That's the cache. But if I've got a couple hundred thousand records, well, the more records that you're retrieving in that lookup, the less efficient it is to leave them all in cache.
Sure, so there's a design aspect to it.
There absolutely is. And you can configure the cache. You can say, I want it fully cached, I want it partially cached. You can control the amount of memory it's going to use. You can even say, I don't want it cached.
Very granular.
And here's another cool one. You can even preload the cache.
Nice.
So that when the data flow starts, it goes out, retrieves the records from the lookup source, loads them in memory, and that way, everything you need is right there and available.
Nice.
Okay. Lastly, I want to talk about some of the data modification transforms. It is called ETL. We're changing the data as it traverses through the pipeline. We've got the ability to change data types with a data conversion transform. Takes a standard data type. It's the equivalent of a SQL Server cast or convert as an example. Mm-hmm. We can do a derived column. Derived column, we can take and calculate a new value based on values that are already in the data flow.
Very powerful transform.
Yeah, an example of that one. I've got a first name, a last name, and I want to combine those into a full name, last name, comma, first name. I can calculate that with an expression and add that to my data flow as a new value. Or I could just use it to replace the existing name value as well. There are a lot of functions in there. There are all of the standard string manipulation and functions and things like that. Very cool. I can do character mapping. Character mapping allows me to manipulate the string data types. Text, varchar, char, using all of the standard string functions, okay?
Upper, and, lower, stuff
yeah,
like that. Yeah,
you can uppercase it, lowercase it, all that kind of stuff.
And like all along, you have some things you want to show us. Or are we not ready for that?
No, we can do that.
All right.
I guess we'll let that happen now.
All right.
Sorry, I was playing with you a little bit there. Let's go over to the virtual machine here, and I have a blank slate with SQL Server Integration Services going, so I'm just going to create a new project, and that new project is going to be an integration services project, and just like before, I really don't care where they put it or what they call it for this.
That's just detail.
We're playing.
For now.
Well, what do I need to be able to do transforms? I need a data flow task. So first thing I'm going to do is drop a data flow task into my control flow. I'm going to open it up. I'm going to grab a data source.
Got to start somewhere.
You do. You got to have data if you're going to transform it. So I'm going to grab an OLEDB source, drop it on there. I don't have a connection manager. I'm going to create one. I'm going to base it on one of the ones we've already got. Makes it nice and easy. And you know what I forgot, George?
What's that?
When I was cleaning up from our last little adventure, I did not recreate my data warehouse. So let me quickly go over to Management Studio and load up a setup script.
Oh, you have something handy for that, do you?
I always have something handy. I'm like the Boy Scouts here in the States.
Always
prepared. Our
motto
is be prepared. So let's go back and into SQL BI. See, there's my error message. I told you I forgot. Let's try it again. I may have to go back and actually kill this.
Yeah.
I do. I'm going to have to reconfigure now. And come on, you. Ha! I love it when that happens.
You know, while you're queuing that up, Rich, whenever I think of the transformations available in SSIS, I'm always reminded of the game Mousetrap. I don't know if you all remember the game Mousetrap, but remember the contraptions and all the moving parts and things like that. It just always reminds me of Mousetrap. What we're building is a data contraption.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. There are a lot of moving pieces, and you do have to actually get them right. So I just went in and I grabbed the connection that I had made earlier.
Perfect.
And we now have our list of tables to get. Every now and again, sometimes if you just recreate or go in and grab a different version, it frequently clears it up. So let's go out and let's look at our product table. All right. And we're just going to grab all of the records from our product table and we're going to play with those. Now, the first thing I'm going to do is I am going to create, and let's take a look and see what our transforms are. As you can tell, we've got a lot of them.
And they're categorized.
They are. Well, kind of loosely.
Loosely.
Very loosely. The common ones and the other ones. So I won't say that it's a really useful categorization, but yeah, you're right. It's there. Let's look at first a very good one, which is our derived column. Now, what did I have to do when I made my data destination aware of the records that were coming in?
Gonna have to make a pipeline flow here.
You got it. Now, when I select the OLEDB source, I just want to give you a little hint, a little preview of things to come. See the two arrows?
There are two.
There are. One of them is kind of bluish, and the other one is red. And the red one is where error is where records that have errors go, if you can figure it. We're going to be talking more about that a little later.
The difficult ones.
It is. We're going to connect the two together. My derived column is now aware of the columns that are coming out of the source. So when I double-click on my derived column, I'm given the dialog that's going to allow me to create a new column. I've got my derived column name. I'm going to call this name description because I was tasked with putting together a concatenation separated by a dash of a name and a product description. Now, over here on the left side, I've got all of the values that are available to me. Variables, including system variables, and all of the columns that are coming into the derived column transform.
This is a powerful editor.
On the right side, I've got all my pre-built functions. So I can go out and grab string functions, for example, and then just drag, drop, and configure. You don't have to program the heck out of this stuff. Yeah, it's nice to program too. Don't get me wrong. I'm a developer. I like to play in code. But this makes it much easier frequently. So like I said, I'm going to add as a new column. The expression is going to be the name.
Drag and drop.
Drag and drop. And then what I'm going to do with it. And then the description. Well, I forgot my plus sign, so let me put that in there. And I got a good one, right?
Looks like it's good.
All right, so let's go. Wait a minute.
Wait a minute.
Red is bad, isn't it?
Red is bad.
Okay, so I got a problem here. If you're a SQL Server developer, this problem is going to be a recurring one for you that's going to drive you crazy. Little tip for all those folks that are coming into this. SQL Server uses a tick mark for strings. Yeah, well, SSIS is more like C sharp, C++.
It's a different expression language.
It is. It uses double quotes. So as soon as I change that, bada bing, my expression's black, and we are off to the races. I hit OK. I now have my derive column. If I go out and I create a destination to take that, we're going to throw this into a flat file destination. I hook it up. I go to configure. I'm going to create a new flat file connection manager, which is going to go out to the desktop and is going to put it into myproducts.txt. I think I hit caps lock there somewhere.
Well, that's going to work.
Yeah, I know. I'm not going to worry about it, but I hate it when that happens. I always feel like I'm yelling at people when I do that.
Why are you yelling?
Easy, George. Easy.
Why are you yelling?
I've got my columns now, the product key, the product alternate key, the name, the description. And look at this. My name description column. When I now go in and I hit OK, I come over to my mappings. There's my name description. I have now added that new column into the flow. When I run this, we go out. Everything looks good from here. Let's go to the desktop.
Looks good.
And my products yelling at me to be looked at. Eventually, it's going to open up, I hope. There we go. And there it is. Here's cycling. Here's cycling helmet. There's clothing. And here is my my name description. Helmet. Cycling helmet. Cool?
You've derived something from thin air.
I have. And you know what? The others are very cool as well. The lookups and things like that. There are actually a large number. I was trying to think of a good word to use. The only one that came to mind was bajillion.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure people actually know that that's a big number.
Yeah, okay.
At any rate, if you look at some of these, I've got conditional splits. I've got my data conversion where I can change data types. I can go in. I've got SharePoint list destinations and sorts. I've got sort transforms I can put in there. If I wanted to put a sort in there in front of my derive column, well, pretty easy to do. I'm going to delete the connection there. Notice I now have problems. I'm going to throw my sort transform in the middle. We'll come in, we will grab it, and then we will connect it downstream. Hopefully that's going to fix it. It should. I have all of mine here. I'm going to take my input column, product key, and now I define my sort type. Sort order, and any comparison flags that are necessary. I hit OK. I've got my sort configured, and notice it cleans up all of the downstream errors because I've put my pipeline in place.
No metadata changed up the pipeline, so everything else bowed,
Absolutely. Bowed
down in compliance.
I will say, though, George, and I'll give you a heads up on this one, if you start doing what I just did, throwing transforms in the middle of a pipe that's already been established, you better make sure that you got the right connections at either end. Because if one of the connections is wrong, just like the wrong connection on a hose, they don't go together real well. So what do we got next there, George?
So next up, we've been looking at moving rows through the pipeline. And let's just say rows moving through the pipeline don't always fit downstream. So we have to handle that.
You mean I'm going to keep on down with that little one I gave you a tip on?
Or that's right.
A preview of
that's
error
right.
rows.
Error rows.
So when we're dealing with error rows occur because there's a problem with data when you're working with it in an expected form as it's going through the pipeline. Maybe on my derived column, I've got two columns that have values that can't be manipulated to do the calculation. They don't match up. Or maybe I'm doing a data conversion from character to number, and somebody put the letter Z in the character column. I can't convert a Z to a number. What happens? What happens is that row causes an error when it hits the data conversion. Now, normal setup is that when the transform kicks an error on a record, that causes the entire data flow to crash.
That was a crashing sound.
I couldn't tell. It almost made me crash. So when the transform crashes, when the pipeline can't put it through, unless you've told it something special to do, it stops it dead in its tracks and causes the entire package to fail. Now, if I've got a 500,000 records going through the pipeline and I got one record with an error, yeah, that's going to be a problem, because that means that if that one record is the 499,373rd record, I got to go back and redo all those ones because it blew up and nothing got saved. What you want to be able to do is take that record out of the data flow and redirect it somewhere else so that one of your data stewards, one of your business analysts, has the ability to deal with the exception as an exception instead of having to redo an entire workflow that worked correctly for everything but that one record. So that is the error rows. Now, there are two kinds of errors that can occur. You can have data conversion errors. Mm-hmm. Data conversion errors means just what I said earlier. You can't make it a number. You can't make it whatever you're trying to make it into.
Like a round peg in a square hole.
You got it. The other type of error, however, is a truncation error.
That sounds scary.
Well, it is, but yeah, not so much. Truncation errors have to deal with when a value does not fit into its destination. So if I had a varchar 50 column, has the potential to hold up to 50 characters. If I were to try and put that into a varchar 30 destination, there's your truncation. It doesn't mean that every record's going to be chopped. It means that there's a possibility that that record is going to get chopped. When the record actually does get chopped, that's when you get the truncation error. Now, that can also happen if you're going from big int to int, from a high decimal, a high number of digit decimal configuration to a smaller number of digits. Sure. Anytime you're trying to take a value that is potentially bigger than its destination, you got the possibility for truncation errors. Now, that's not the only thing that can happen, George.
Nope, one more.
Yep. We also have what's called the on-error event. Now, an event is something that happens inside of the package. There are lots of different kinds of events, and we're going to need to talk about those in a lot more detail this afternoon.
Yep.
But the on-error event is a specific event that occurs, that gets fired when an error occurs. Now, the cool thing is that when you have an on-error event, you can actually configure a control flow that's going to execute in response to the event. And that control flow will occur only when the event occurs. With the error event, it only happens, it's only triggered if there is an error on a record. But like I said, there are a bunch of others as well.
And you have some things to show us, specifically some pipeline error handling.
Yeah, I do. And you know what? We are going to configure that derived column that we had there to pump any errors that it's got out to another file. So the first thing I need to do is I need to create a destination. So I need to create a flat file destination. So in this case, I'm going to put all of the errors that occur out to a text file so that they can be dealt with by our data stewards. Are you familiar with that term, George?
I am.
I wonder if everybody else is.
Go ahead and help everybody else out.
All right, so many times we have folks that whose primary responsibility is to manage the data in the data warehouse. Not necessarily operational, but in the data warehouse as well. So those folks, their title is data steward in many ways. So that's what we want to deal with. So, all right, I've created my flat file destination, has no input columns. So before I can really configure it, what I'm going to do is take the error output from derive column, the red arrow, and I'm going to connect it to the flat file. And it immediately brings up a dialog box because I have not configured that error output. So here, I have choices. I have error choices and truncation choices. And I can say what I want to happen. The default is fail the component, which means interrupt processing and send a failure message. I also, however, can ignore the failure. Yeah, well, that doesn't make a lot of sense because then nobody finds out about it and it doesn't get fixed. Or, and this is the one I like, I get to redirect the row.
So you can configure this per column per problem or per problem per column.
In many cases, you have a very, very, very fine level of control. Absolutely. Now that I've got my error output configured, let's go configure our flat file destination. Now, I don't have any records that are actually going to error. What I want to show you on here, though, is the mappings. Notice how the input columns have a couple of added to it.
Error codes.
Error code and error column. So when you get a value, a row that ends up in error, it doesn't just pop it out to the destination. It actually tells you what happened as well.
Nice. Good forensics.
It is helpful. It is very helpful. So, what do we got next?
Next up, well, in particular, you being a .NET guy, you're going to have some fun stuff to show us here. We have another kind of a task called the script task.
Yeah, the script task. So, one of the things that's really cool about SSIS is the fact that it is very, very easy to extend functionality. Now, there is a whole lot. Don't get me wrong. You're not going to be playing in that script task day in and day out. But the script task itself is a building block that we have available to us where we can create functionality that does not currently exist in SSIS. And it uses standard .NET development. It uses either Visual Basic or C# and gives you the ability to create not just new transformations, George, but new destinations and new sources as well.
So I can use this in control flow and I can use it in the pipeline.
Absolutely. You can do both. And in the pipeline, you can use it as a source, as a transform, or as a destination. The only limit to what you can do with a script transform is that limit right there. The one between your ears. If you can dream it and you can design it, then you can code it. It is literally that powerful.
And the framework that is provided is huge.
Oh, you've got access to the entire .NET framework. You've got access to all of the class library functionality that Microsoft provides pre-built and ready for you to use. Now, scripts, as I said, can transform data as it's going through the pipeline. You can create custom code to reach out to technologies that you cannot create connection managers for. You can go out and provide destinations. You can create hooks into an application so that SSIS could literally be used to bring data directly into an executing application without having to go through a database, without having to go through a flat file or anything else. To build a script, the first thing you need to do is know what language. I certainly wouldn't want to try and write a book in French when I only speak German. So please understand, C# and VB, very different. If you like curly braces and double equals, which I'm going to forget later, if you like semicolons and brevity, C# is for you. If you like a more language-friendly development, something that's more self-documenting and readable, maybe VB is the way you go. It uses the VBA.net editor and has the ability to communicate back with the package to access variables and provide success and failure so that if you've got a problem, you have the ability to notify SSIS that it's out there.
And you have some things to show.
I do. I absolutely do. So let us go out, and I am going to close out this project that I'm in because I have another one out there. Come on. Yeah, we'll save it. What the heck? And we open up our new project, which is down here. Nope, wrong one. There it is.
Says script demo.
It does. And there is in here a data flow task. And in the data flow task, I've got some scripts. I've got a script that's acting as a data source. I've got a script that's acting as a transformation. I've got a script that's acting as a destination. And I've got a script that's going to run after the data flow task in the control flow. So we're going to give you examples of all four types.
Excellent.
So let's start out with our script source. Now the script source, when you go to configure it, the first choice you have to make is what language you're going to be using. Script language down here, Visual C# 2010. So that works for me because I'm a C# kind of guy. I click on the edit script button and it now launches VBA. It launches the application script editor and brings you in. Now we've got some things here that we need to explain. If you're not a C# developer, don't worry about this. But there are some things, and I just want to point out, in C# we have brought in some of the pre-built functionality from the system namespace, the data namespace, the DTS namespace. So it provides us access to pre-built Microsoft functionality.
Bunch of references.
You got it. We have some methods. Methods are the equivalent of scripts in T-SQL. They are little packages of executing code that you call by name. One of them, acquire connections, is code that's going to run when a connection to an outside source is brought and opened. I've got a pre-execute, which is going to happen before the transform executes. And then I've got create new output rows, which is the method that's responsible for going out, grabbing the data from wherever it is, and putting it into the pipeline. It uses the output buffer dot add row method. The add row method is what adds the row into the connection. So I could go out and access, I don't know, an FTP site somewhere out in across the ocean in another country, authenticate to it using the script, go out, grab information, process it because it's in a custom form, strip out the individual values, add them to the row, and put them into the pipeline.
Go.
All that. And then, of course, the cleanup when you're done. There is a post-execute. That's where you would put up any cleanup code. And there is a release connections, which happens when the connection is closed out. Second piece of this, I have a script transform. Now again, here I've got input columns. Those are the ones that were added into the output buffer by the input script. And I have inputs and outputs which define what's coming into the script and what's going to be sent out again. When I'm in my script, again, I go to my edit script. It brings up the script editor and loads in the functionality that's already been built. In here, again, I've got pre-execute and I've got post-execute. Those are going to be in every script in the pipeline. Here, though, I've got process input row. Now, notice it says input zero. I can have multiple inputs coming into this script from different sources and do custom processing to combine them into a single output. Now, this one happens to be a very simple script. It's going to take the row from the data buffer. It's going to act on the second column, putting it to uppercase. So it's going to take the input, and it's going to put it all into uppercase. Finally, I have my destination script. The destination script now, I'm going to show you something a little different. We can have variables in our packages, and the scripts have access to the variables, but only if I add them to the read-only variables, if it's going to be read-only, or the read-write variables, if I need to be able to write a value back to that variable. Here, I've specified the user results variable as a read-write variable, and I hope I'm not giving away the farm here.
No.
But when I go into my script, guess what it's going to do?
What?
It's going to put the output into the variable. Okay, so I've got my pre-execute. I've got my process input row. In my pre-execute, I'm creating an array called my results. My results is going to be a string array with six members. In the process input row, I'm going to take the current row and put it in my results, the value of column two of that current row. And then when I'm done executing, when I'm done processing all the rows, I'm going to access the read-write variables, user results variable, and I'm going to assign my results to the value. Now, that's all set up because once I'm done, what I end up with is whatever what came in from the input going through and getting up in the user results variable. When I come back out to the control flow, I go into my script task. Notice user results is listed in the read-only variables. So when I go in to edit the script here, it now is going to take in the main method, create a results message. The results message is going to loop through. Remember, user results has an array of strings. So it's going to go and it's going to loop through all the strings and append them to the results message. And then it's going to show that message and tell SQL Integration Services that it was successful when it's done.
Now, Rich, I'm not a .NET guy. Can I make sure I got this right?
You can. Go for it.
So you derive some variables dynamically in the pipeline, and then you're passing that output from variable then back to the task, and you're going to use the task to show it? Did
yeah.
I get that right?
You've got that absolutely right.
Alrighty.
Matter of fact, would you like me to prove it to you?
I would, and this is reminding me of Mousetrap all over again.
Yeah, but you know what I like about this? It's a better Mousetrap.
Yep.
So let's run this. When we run it, You can see the data flow task ran. The script task is running. Here's my results. And yes, I have values 0 through 5, all caps. I love it when a plan comes together.
There you go.
All right.
You're referencing the A-Team.
That's an American TV show that has a little bit of a cult following, shall we say. All right, so what do you think, George?
What's
the next thing on our agenda?
We have more mousetrap stuff.
We do.
Especially with this next line of transformations. We have fuzzy transforms, and we have a couple of those. And I know you have some enthusiasm about those.
I do, although I'm a little unclear on how they work sometimes.
But get it? You're fuzzy on those?
Yeah.
Oh, I was expecting to hear some.
I got a groan from the peanut gallery.
I was sure I was going to hear a groan.
I was wondering if they were awake. Now I know they are.
Yeah. So they were fuzzy too.
Fuzzy grouping and fuzzy lookup. Fuzzy grouping is all about taking records that you're trying to say they have the same logical entity. They represent the same logical entity, but they were defined a little bit differently. Maybe, like, I'm Rich Curry, but maybe I'm in a couple of different systems. In System 1, I'm Rich Curry. In System 2, I'm Richard Curry. In System 3, I'm Fred Curry. In all of those, it could be the same person. There are other values in the record that can contribute to figuring out, oh yeah, that is the same one. Maybe it's the same address, the same phone number, the same city or state, whatever it might be. So fuzzy grouping is a transform that you can use to take all of those records that logically represent the same entity, even though they don't have the same values, and associate them together. Okay, it does require that you have a SQL Server connection because it uses temp tables in the connection target to hold intermediate results and work with the data as it's trying to figure it out. As you might guess, this is not necessarily a processor-free occurrence.
Sure.
There's a little work going on. So if you're going to use this, you do your identity or the identity that's running the package needs to have the create table permission because it uses temp tables only. Now, the fuzzy grouping goes through and it identifies what's called a lead record. That's the record that has the values that it identifies as being the right ones. And then a matching record, which contains the values that aren't exact matches, but it thinks match up with that lead record. It returns the key of the lead record, the key of the matching record. It also gives you an idea of how close it is by going with a similarity score. So just because SQL Server thinks they belong together doesn't necessarily mean that they do, but it certainly gives you an idea of what happens, of what the possibilities are.
All right.
The other transform that we've got that works on this kind of fuzzy logic is called the fuzzy lookup. Now, again, if I've got data that exists in multiple source systems representing the same logical entity but with different physical values, then it's going to be a lot harder to match that data together. So, again, you do have to have a SQL Server connection, but this one, instead of providing for temporary tables, is going to provide the location of the data that you're looking against to try and find a match. Now, you have to define one column as your fuzzy column. You can have more than one, but there has to be at least one. Those are the columns, when they're identified as fuzzy, that are going to allow the inexact matching. You can only use string data types or text data types. You can't use numerics or anything like that.
And that makes sense.
It does. It really does. Because if the numbers are different, the numbers are different. But if one says 3 Main Street and one says 30 Main Street, yeah, that could be a typo.
Yeah.
It absolutely could be. So those are the kinds of things we're trying to find. Now, similarity and confidence are kind of like, we'll call them lines in the sand.
Okay.
They provide you the ability to say, a match must have values that are 95% similar. In other words, it's got to have most of the characters the same, like 30 Main Street and 3 Main Street. They're pretty similar. There's a good likelihood, if all the other columns are the same, that that's a matching value. Confidence is more of a representation of how confident you are that they're the same. If I've got, for example, ST period and SAINT period, then the values are significantly different.
Yeah, the list of characters is quite different.
Yeah, but when you actually look at the data, logically, at least in English, ST period is an abbreviation for the word saint. So I have a confidence level that kind of reminds me that, yeah, I'm pretty happy with this match. It's pretty good. So let's go take a quick look at a fuzzy lookup and see what we've got going here. I've got my virtual machine squared away, and I'm in my fuzzy package. In my fuzzy package, I have an OLEDB source that I've defined that goes out to DemoDW and grabs my customers. Now, that then acts as an input for fuzzy grouping. Now, fuzzy grouping requires a connection manager. And guess what? There's my DemoDW. It's going to go out and it is going to look up and it is going to base in the customer table. We are going to put an input column of customer name. There's an output alias, there's a grouping output alias, the match type, and yes, you can determine exact or inexact. So if I have some columns, for example, a name column, the names may be similar, but I want the city, state, and zip to be identical because I know that it's not a match if they're the different.
Yeah, then I have a very high degree of match confidence.
Exactly. So I can define, for example, I could put in here my city and define this one as an exact match. So now my lookup is based on two columns, a fuzzy match on the name and an exact match on the city. As I come over, I've got my similarity number. This is where you define the similarity threshold, which is calculated by the transform, and say, I need this to be 0.85, 85% similar, in order for that to be defined as a match. Now, George, have you ever run into a situation where you've got leading or trailing numbers?
Oh, yeah.
Like on an address, for example.
Sure, sure.
123 Main Street versus 456 Main Street.
Sure.
Well, there are times when those numbers are meaningful. There are other times where they're noise to the matching process. So in this numerals column, I have the ability to configure whether I want to deal with neither leading nor trailing numbers, just leading numbers, just trailing numbers, or both. And then finally, I have the ability to tell it whether case sensitivity is important, whether canotype is important, non-spacing characters, character width, all that kind of stuff.
Lots of control.
Okay. Now, again, this is one of those transforms. I don't have a real database here that's got a lot of differences where fuzzy is going to make a difference. But this gives you a real good idea of how the configuration goes.
Yeah, good.
All right. So this module, we have spent a lot of time talking about how you manipulate data as it goes through the data flow pipeline. We've talked about some of the standard transforms like a derived column, the lookups, the merges. We've talked about some of the, am I missing a whole set?
Yeah, we have more.
We have more.
Yeah, we got to
split. I forgot all about that. My goodness. You know, I looked at the splitter before. We do. Let's go look at the splitting the flow. And we've got two transforms that we're going to be dealing with here. The multicast.
These are useful.
They are. And I can't believe I forgot about them. They're some of my favorites, too. Multicast, which takes a data flow and duplicates it to multiple destinations. And we've also got the conditional split. Conditional split allows me to formulaically determine where a record is going to go into which of the output pipelines. So multicast, like I said, duplication of data, multiple pipelines. Each pipeline has its own transformations after the duplication occurs.
So process some rows.
Absolutely.
Or
process
one set of rows in the pipeline and have another pipeline unprocessed.
You could, absolutely. And you could even, if you had, for example, sales information that was going to the financial group and sales information that was going to the sales group, maybe they have different calculations that need to be applied. So I do a multicast, and then I do the sales calculations to the sales destination. I do the financial calculations to the financial destination.
Good example.
But the key is that out of that multicast, it's very simple. You drop the transform in, you connect transforms after the fact. There's no other configuration required. The other transform we've got is the conditional split. And this is the one where I can take records from the data flow and direct them out to different hoses, different pipelines. Divide and conquer, exactly. So now maybe let's take that sales example again, but now I've got sales reps who are in different regions of the world. And I've got managers that deal with the sales for only that region. They don't need to see the rest of the world. So I can direct the sales records to the appropriate pipeline based on the region that's going to receive them.
Good example.
So let's flip back over to the virtual machine, because what I'm going to do is I'm going to take this OLEDB source that I've got here, and I am going to now split it. So we're going to come back up. We are going to grab our conditional split. I connect the two together. That gives the conditional split awareness of what it's going to be working with.
Upstream metadata.
You got it. Now I go into my transformation error editor. Now, let me ask you a question, George.
Go ahead.
Does this GUI look at all familiar to you?
Very, very familiar scent to me.
Absolutely. It is the same GUI that you get for a derived column, because you are building calculations, building expressions. This is the expression editor. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to come in here and I'm going to grab country and drop it into my condition. And I'm going to say country equal to, and we'll say USA. And the output name is going to be, oh, I have a problem here. I'm not sure what it is yet. I'm going to have to look at it. Give me a minute. But the name we're going to take is US Customers. Oh, I know what didn't I tell you on the last one? Single equals versus double equals. I have done that, and I will continue to do that, even when I remember not to do that.
No, I thought you were leading us into a brick wall, only to show us the rescue.
Oh, no. No, no, no. I literally forgot it.
All right.
In the expression language in SSIS, there are two things you really need to be aware of. Thing one, it's case sensitive. If you notice, I drag and drop everything.
Please.
Thing two, assignment is one equal sign, comparison is two equal sign. If you keep those in the front of your head, you'll get it right most times. So, U.S. customers is country equal to USA. I'm now going to get all other customers. And my condition here is going to be, and I was about to type it. Actually, you know what? Watch. Just to prove my point, and we're going to say not equals. USA. Notice the red?
Danger, Will Robinson.
You got it. The red indicates I've got a problem. To fix it, I capitalize country. It comes in. It's now fixed. So I have two outputs. Those two outputs now are going to have U.S. customers and all other customers. I hit OK. When I come out of my conditional split,
perfect.
I can now create two destinations. Destination one, flat file.
This is the fun part.
I click and connect. It asks me which output I want. I choose my U.S. customers, hit OK. I drop a second flat file destination. Whoops, I grabbed the error. That's not what I wanted. We will delete that one. We will grab our second one, and now for that one, we will grab all other customers. And notice it is marked in the GUI so that you know which one is which.
Handy.
It is. All right.
We looked at a lot of things.
Now is it wrap up?
Yeah, now it's wrap up. We looked at a lot this module.
Yeah, we did. We talked about the transforms. We talked about building that data pipeline, not just the source and the destination, but rather all of the manipulation of information that can occur in between the two. Transforms like the derived column, like the fuzzy grouping and fuzzy lookup and the conditional splits, things of that nature. You've got ultimate flexibility to do the T in the ETL.
Excellent. So thanks everyone for watching the Implementing a Data Warehouse with SQL Server 2012 Jumpstart. I'm hungry, and it's time for a meal break. So we'll see you at the top of the hour. Again, make sure you get up, move around a little bit, and we'll see you back at the top of the hour.
Have one.